Did so well last week of going through a whole chapter. We're going to attempt it again this week. Only because as I was looking at the calendar and looking at Ecclesiastes, I realized we only have 3 weeks of the study left before we break for summer, which is kind of crazy because of Easter and Mother's Day and everything else that's going on. And so we're going to go through 10 this week, and then we'll only have 2 chapters to go. So we won't read, again, the whole chapter to begin with. We'll read them kind of as we get to them. But the title, if you take notes, the title of our time tonight is The Error of the Fool. And much of what Solomon covers in chapter 10, like in all the chapters, it covers a multitude of things, but much of what he covers is really focused at the fool or the idea of folly and going down the wrong path. And so that's what we're going to look at this evening. And let's close with a word of prayer. You can tell what my day's been like. Let's open with a word of prayer, and then we'll jump in to the study together. God, we thank you for this evening that we can gather in your house. We thank you for your word that is so valuable to us. And God, I pray tonight as we come to this text that, as Solomon points out, the error of the fool, that we would take an honest assessment of our own heart and life and see where we may be following after the fool. God, that we may be truthful and with ourselves as you point things out to us. And God, again, we just thank you for the good things you're doing here. It's a joy even to just be downstairs for a few minutes tonight and hear a room full of kids singing praise to your name. And God, they probably don't know fully what they're singing, but we pray that as they grow in their faith and in their understanding, that their singing would only become more passionate as they do come into a deeper and closer relationship with you. So be with us tonight as we study your word. May you be glorified from it, and may we be changed by it. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So the error of the fool. Proverbs 14:7 says something like this. It's a tidbit of advice. It says, stay away from a foolish person. You'll gain no knowledge from their speech. That's good advice, right? A foolish person isn't going to help you out in life at all, but really they're going to detract from you. And so we have some statements, some common statements that we make that we could probably assess or sum up that verse in. And so I'm going to say the majority of the statement. You fill in the last word. One bad apple will spoil the whole bunch. Barrel. Who said barrel? You got a couple barrels. Wow. Who's ever heard barrel before? A few of you? I've never heard barrel before. I learned something new today. Young guy. That's what it is. All right. This is more biblical, but a little leaven leavens the whole lump. What is those proverbial sayings, what are they trying to get at?
Don't take much to spoil.
Doesn't take much to spoil something. Sure. Somebody else. How would you sum up those things?
It only takes one to spoil.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Some.
Nope, it's not some, just one. A little bit of bad, right? Somebody else. Rebecca. Now that's looking into it a different angle. We often like to think of the one bad as being who? Somebody else. But we all have an impact. We all have an effect on those around us. And we're going to get into some of that tonight, that sometimes we can't see ourselves as the fool. But who's ever recognized years down the road that I was kind of foolish at certain times in my life? And so as we go through this tonight, I pray that our hearts would understand exactly what Solomon is saying, really what God is trying to get across to us, and that we would embrace it, that we'd come under its authority, and we'd seek to live in light of it. Now, there's much to be said about the wise and the fool in the Word of God, especially in the book of Proverbs. I think I said last week, I had been reading through the book of Proverbs and was just amazed again of how much God plainly says in His Word about the wise and the fool, and how often we willingly or quickly neglect to see those words as they might pertain to us. It's interesting, as I said, the interesting thing about fools is that we never see ourselves as one. At least I don't. And it's easy for us to pick out the faults and flaws in other people's lives, but it's rare for us to see where we have gone astray. And that's why Jesus tells us it's better to check our own hearts before we start investigating in other people's hearts. It's better for us to take an honest look in our own lives before we start meddling in other people's business. Because the fool is the one who says that he thinks he has it all figured out. There are no areas that he needs correcting. There is nothing in his life that needs to change. He doesn't even need God, right? The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. that God does not exist, that God does not pertain to him. And so we have to be careful in our own lives to make sure that we're not living unknowingly the lifestyle of the fool. And so as we jump into chapter 10, Solomon says a lot about the fool. And as we did last week, we're going to break this up into several different sections, and we'll read each section as we get to it. So let's start in verses 1 through 3. It says this, "Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Yea, also, when he that is a fool walketh by the way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to everyone that he is a fool." He starts this chapter just hitting you right on the head, right? He makes it plain and simple, simple to understand and plain to grasp. And so he begins with this interesting statement that really sets the mood for the whole chapter. We often think of a fool making a big mistake, but really what Solomon is getting across here is many times the fool just continually makes really little mistakes over and over again doing the wrong thing. It's not like they woke up one morning and said, oh, it's a great day to rob a bank, right? It's just that they mismanaged their money or they lied to an individual here and was dishonest with an individual over there. And so it's not necessarily that the fool does these really big glaring things wrong. It's just that they have a track record of doing a bunch of little things wrong. And that eventually catches up with you. We've all experienced that in our own life. And so the first illustration that he uses here is that dead flies in the ointment or the perfume of the apothecary send forth a stinking savor or a bad smell. Who's ever killed a fly before and you're like, I don't know where that went after you've killed it? And you're hoping it didn't land in your salad, right? I wouldn't have to worry about that because I don't eat salad, but some of you healthy people might have to worry about that. Well, you killed a fly before, you don't know where it went. Who's ever really given it much thought after that? Like, I gotta find that thing or it's going to cause my whole house to stink. Well, that's not true. One little fly is not going to cause your whole house to stink, but a little fly or one fly can cause the perfume or the ointment to go bad and sour. And that's what Solomon's getting at here, that we may not notice the one wrong deed, that it affects all of life, but he's saying that it will affect your life and it'll affect it in a big way, really in the sense that you become marred or noticed for or identified by that little thing that you do. And so Solomon's trying to get us to understand that, yes, little things do matter. Little things do matter. When we were down in Virginia, we had a church softball team, and most of us on the team thought it was just a fun time to go hang out and play some softball. And then they broke it up into two teams, and it was the people that took it serious and the people that thought it was just a fun time to go out and play softball. And I was on the second team. And the coach, before they broke the teams up, said, practice like you plan to play. And we're grown men out in the field playing softball. It's like, this doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But what was he trying to get across to us? It matters. It matters. Every little thing you do matters. Noah's playing baseball this year, and he's not starting, which is a huge bummer to him. And I told him that when you're on the bench, don't be on the bench. Be the person that's going to get the bat when the hitter throws the bat behind. Be the guy that's running to get the pass balls from the catcher. Be the guy that's willing to do whatever the coach needs. Why? Because little things are noticed. And that's what Solomon is getting at here. That the dead fly in the ointment, it may not seem like it really matters, but in the end it's going to matter because it's going to leave a stinking savor or a bad smell. And he goes on to say in verse number 1, so doth a little folly in him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor. So Solomon says, a dead fly is going to cause the ointment to stink, and a person who acts like a fool, even if it's in one area, it's going to have a negative impact on your life. When we were teenagers, I could have never pastored the church that we went to growing up. There's too many people that remembered everything I ever did. And I wasn't a bad kid, per se, but I just did stuff, right? I was a kid, and I wasn't even a kid. I was a teenager, and we played hide-and-seek one night, and I decided to hide in the trash can. Well, trash can tipped over, and I put a hole in the wall. So I'm remembered for putting a hole in the wall. There, this may be too much information for you, but our church got robbed down there several times. And one night, a bunch of us went to Friendly's, and if you've ever been to Friendly's before, you know it takes forever to get out of there. So by the time we got done at Friendly's, you know, it was late and it was dark, and me and my friend got back to the church, and we both had to go to the bathroom. And so we went to the bathroom in the snow. Well, he decided it was a great idea to, for lack of a better term, put my initials in the snow. And that's the night the church got robbed. And so I got called into the office on the following Sunday, and the pastor was like, "So I don't think it was you guys, but can you tell me why your initials are in the snow?" And it's like, it's all him. So why am I telling you those stories? That's probably too much information. Because it's a reminder that the little things matter. That when we often give ourselves a pass. It doesn't matter how I act. It doesn't matter how I treat this person. It doesn't matter the words that I say. But that's the mentality of the fool. The fool says everybody's going to forget. And they're lying to themselves. Because everybody always remembers. The little things will haunt you for the rest of your life. There's things that I did with my brother as a child that it seems like every family gathering we go to, it's brought up. And it's like to the point where I'm not going to these family gatherings anymore because they're brought up so often. But Solomon's trying to get us to understand that even the smallest of things, when they're done carelessly or when we act foolishly, will harm our reputation, it will harm our honor, and it will make us appear to those around us like we have no wisdom, that we don't know how to act, that we don't know how to make a wise decision. And so we often think this is vital information for young people. This is vital information for everybody. Why? Because even as an almost 40-year-old man, I could still make some pretty foolish decisions. I could still ruin the rest of my life with a small decision that I think isn't going to matter in the end. And that's what Solomon wants us to understand. He says in verse 2, a wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart at his left. Now, what does this mean? Well, if we think in ancient terms, if we think in Bible terms, the right hand was always the place that was elevated, and the left hand was always the place that was looked at as a negative. Where is Jesus seated? The right hand of the Father. Who's ever heard the term the right hand of fellowship? In war times, at least in years gone by, The left hand was always or often known as the dirty hand, the hand that was used to do things that you couldn't wash your hands after. And so nobody wanted to shake somebody's left hand because that was the dirty or the unclean hand. And so the side of the right is always looked at as being elevated. It's interesting, the idea of the left hand here in the Latin carries the idea of being sinister. Now, I'm left-handed, so I don't know what that says about me. But what's Solomon getting across here? That there's a right way to live. He's not speaking of which side you're on modern-day events as we understand them, right or left. But he's bringing about this idea that there is a proper way, a correct way to do things, a correct way to live, and that would be on the right side of things, or you could be on the wrong side, which is being understood as the left hand of things. And so Solomon is saying the wise man's heart is inclined to the right side, to do things the proper way, to go about things in the right order, whereas we could take, just from inferring into the passage, that the left side would be what? The direction of the fool, the direction of those who don't care about God as judge or about others as he is supposed to serve them. And so he goes on to say in verse 3, "Yea, also, when he that is a fool walketh by the way, his wisdom faileth him, and he saith to everyone that he is a fool." What does this mean? Well, really, verse 3 is just saying a fool goes on his way, and those who see him know that he's a fool, just by the way he handles himself. Now, let's be honest. Everyone's good at being honest in church, right? Who's ever seen somebody just by the way they were acting, and you said to yourself, "Person's a fool"? Go ahead. We all have. Now, I wonder who said that about us, right? In the moments of our lives where we weren't thinking clearly. And so it's not that Solomon is saying it's our place to judge people as a final judge, but as a parent, there are certainly kids that I look at and say, "Sorry, kids, you're not hanging out with that person." Why? Because they're going down a wrong path. They're going after things that are not heavenly focused or eternally focused. And so Solomon sets the stage here in verses 1 through 3 really to help us understand that there are only two categories to be in. Do you recognize that in the Bible, it's always very black and white? When it comes to righteousness and justice and holiness, there's never a lot of gray. It's always very black and white. You're either saved or you're lost. You're either righteous or you're unrighteous. You're either walking in wisdom or you're walking as a fool. And I think part of the problem in modern culture is that we want to give ourselves and everybody else a free pass, so there's this very big gray middle ground. But Jesus tells us that we'll be known by our fruits. And the fruits of righteousness are only produced as we follow after Jesus wholeheartedly. So there's no really middle ground in the Christian life. And I think even Solomon would agree with that, that really when it comes down to it, a person has a track record of being wise or a person has a track record of being foolish. We're all known for the things that we've done, and those things will follow us for the remainder of our days. People remember things, even if it was done in our past. People remember those things, and they'll gladly bring them up at any chance they get. And so Solomon's encouraging us here, even without saying it, to be one who is wise. Any thoughts on verses 1 through 3? Eddie. Yeah, right.
I don't like that.
Absolutely. No, a culture especially wants to make everything fit. Everything's okay. And the Bible has a drastically different message than that. And it's good for us to be familiar with that. It's good for us to raise our kids with that mindset, that there's a right way to go and there's a wrong way to go. Annie. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the tongue is a powerful thing, right? And we can cause people to do foolish things by the things we say. We have some of our kids are very literal. You say something and they're going to believe to the T, right? Like that's what dad meant. And it's like, well, that's not really what I meant. Might be what I said, but it's not what I meant. So who learns the lesson? Say what you mean, right? Don't beat around the bush. And when you say something, stick to it. And that's something, you know, I think as parents, when it comes to raising children, the idea of discipline is a biblical idea. But don't threaten discipline unless you're willing to follow through. And don't hold something over a child's head unless you mean it. Because those kids are going to remember that one day. If you don't want them to do something, make it very clear that you don't want them to do something and that there will be consequences to follow after if they do it. But if you say not to do it and you say there's going to be consequences and then you're like, well, I guess I'll give you a free pass this time, what are they going to think the next time they go to do that thing? They don't mean it. So who's the fool? Not the kid, right? It's the parent. The parent's the fool. So good wisdom there from Solomon to mean what we say what we mean, to walk in wisdom rather than in foolishness, and to make sure that what we're known for is what would glorify the Lord. Any other thoughts on verses 1 through 3?
They wanted me to be the pastor here at the first meeting when I was interviewed. I said, you guys got to make a decision here. I grew up here.
Yeah.
Everybody knows me before I got saved. Everybody. They can tell you stories and they won't have to lie. So you really want me to be your pastor. Because, I mean, this was my home.
Yeah.
The Franklin County.
Sure. And word travels fast in a small county, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Even before cell phones.
That's right. Anybody else? Somebody had their hand up? Justin. Thanks for this lesson on life, Justin. Next time I see a fly land on my cheeseburger, get a new one. That's funny. All right, moving on to verses 4 through 7. It says, if the spirit of the ruler rises against thee, Leave not thy place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, as an error which proceedeth from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich sit in low place. I have seen servants upon horses and princes walking as servants upon the earth. So Solomon, he goes from talking about the fool to giving some wisdom as to how we can guard ourselves from being the fool. The end of verse number 4 is very helpful. He says in the whole of the verse, if the spirit of the ruler rise up against you, leave not your place, for yielding pacifieth great offenses. What does he mean? Calmness will lay great offenses to rest. Now, what is the ruler he's speaking of here? Well, it could be any ruler. It could be anybody that has the charge of leadership over you. And when rulers make an unfair judgment, or when rulers seem to do something that's not right or that we don't like, what's our natural inclination? Who do you think you are, right? I'll tell you, I'll take your job one day. And I think there's not a time and place for that. I think there is a time to rise up against leadership that is poor. But it's not as often as we think it is, right? It's not every chance we get. And so what he's trying to get us to understand, if we're going to live as a fool, then every offense that comes our way, we fight back at, we get what's ours, we tell them off, and we tell them everything we think about them. But Solomon's telling us here that calmness will lay great offenses to rest, both in myself and in the one who has wronged me. If I rise up against somebody who rules over me, I don't have the power to kick them out, but they have the power to fire me or do whatever they want to me. And so if I remain calm, then I'm going to be in a better place. And if I remain calm, then my Christian testimony can shine forth. But if all I'm worried about is getting what's mine or what I have deemed as justice, then I'm going to make a stink about it. And so Solomon says, be careful of how we approach these things. There's a way to approach them as a fool, and there's a way to approach them as one who is wise. I think of some of the teenagers that we got to minister to through the years who at 16 had more jobs than I had as an adult. And why was that? Because nobody knew how to do anything but them. And every boss they ever had was wrong in every scenario and every situation. If you see somebody that has more jobs than years behind their name as an age, probably a fool, right? And I don't say that lightheartedly, but there's some truth to this, that if you can't keep a job, and the common denominator in all of these instances is you rising up against the person that was wrong, you actually might be the problem in this scenario. And so Solomon's giving us wisdom here, that calmness pacifies great offenses. As I said, there is a time when you're being taken advantage of or wrongfully manipulated or abused. There's a time to speak up to that. But speaking truth to power doesn't happen when your boss tells you to do something that you don't want to do, right? That's just a part of living life, that sometimes we do things we have to do things we don't want to do. He goes on to say, there's an evil which I have seen under the sun as an error which proceedeth from the ruler. And what is that evil? Folly is set in great dignity, and the rich set in low places. As he continues on in verse number 5, he expresses another evil that he saw. This evil was an error, that those in power don't always make the right decisions. He then goes on to show of how life is really not fair. And we've already viewed this several times in the book of Ecclesiastes, but it was really getting to Solomon. And so he then expresses this in the form of an illustration, that folly is set in dignity and the rich are set in a low place, that slaves are on horses and princes are walking. Now, I made this statement earlier today, this morning, that we often judge based off of the information that we have, but how many of us fail to remember at times that we don't have all the information? I think that's, again, one of the flaws. It's probably been in every society, but I recognize it in our current society, that we all think we're justified in making a judgment on every situation when we don't probably even know a quarter of what's going on. We don't know the whole of the story. We can have opinions, but it's oftentimes we're quick. Oftentimes I'm quick to say, well, I'd never do it that way. And there's probably a lot of people that have said that about me in my life that didn't understand the fullness of the story. We had an elders meeting this afternoon, and just discussing things of the past that none of you even would understand anything about or know anything about. And there's oftentimes when you're in a position of leadership to make decisions, there's people on two sides. Why haven't you done anything? And why did you do anything at all? Right? Everybody thinks they have the better understanding of the situation when they're lacking the details. And that's really what Solomon is getting at here. That yes, there is great evil in rulers at times, but oftentimes we don't know the fullness of the story. That's good for us to remember. And how does that play out? That folly or foolish people are set in great dignity and the rich set in the low place. Well, what does James tell us about? It's better to take the low place and be called up to the front than to take the front and be sent back to the back. We joked about this when we were boarding the plane the other day. One of the missionaries, actually Scooter Belasco, told us, if you're on a flight that doesn't have assigned seats, check online, see if it's a full flight, and board last. Now, my mom could never do that. She always has to get in and get her seat as soon as possible. But if you wait to the end and it's not a full flight, oftentimes you get the cream of the crop when it comes to the seat selection. And we sat down and it's like, oh, we remember that passage in James. We took the good seats. They're going to make us go all the way back and sit by the bathrooms now. Luckily, they didn't. We got the good seats. But that's how we need to think through life. That sometimes life doesn't make sense. That the one that fools are set in great dignity and the rich set in low places. That sometimes the servants ride upon the horses and the princes are walking as servants upon the earth. Sometimes life doesn't make sense. But as I said, sometimes life doesn't make sense because we don't have the whole story. Sometimes we don't have all the details. Sometimes things that we perceive as wrong are wrong. And sometimes the things that we perceive as wrong are actually right because we don't have all the details. And so we have to be careful how we make judgments. We have to be careful how we assess things. And even in our own lives, when it seems like we're getting the raw end of the deal, we have to trust that God is the good and final judge, and we leave these things ultimately up to Him. And so Solomon is encouraging us to walk in wisdom. Yes, some things don't make sense, but some things won't make sense, and that's okay. Any thoughts on verses 4 through 7? When you talk, it gives me a chance to take a drink, so please talk. All right, we'll continue on then. In verses 8 through 11, he gives us some more understanding of how to walk in wisdom or things to watch out for. In verse 8, he says, "He that diggeth a pit shall fall into it, and whoso breaketh a hedge, a serpent shall bite him. Whoso removeth stone shall be hurt therewith, and he that cleaveth wood shall be endangered thereby. If the iron be blunt, and he do not whet the edge, then must he put to more strength. But wisdom is profitable to direct. Surely the serpent will bite without enchantment, and a babbler is no better." You ever read some of these passages that Solomon writes and it's like, are you just putting words on paper? Or do you actually mean something, right? Is this just like a late night rant? Or did you actually have a purpose? He has a purpose. And that's why context is important, right? If we didn't start with verses 1 through 3, then we wouldn't understand that this is really talking about the idea of the fool and the things that the fool does. Now, as we've said throughout the Song of Solomon, as we've said throughout Ecclesiastes, I'm in the whole wrong book. As we've said throughout Ecclesiastes, there are truisms that Solomon's going to bring out, and this is a set of those truisms. Who's ever dug a hole and not fallen in it? I would hope most of us, right? If you've fallen in every hole you've ever dug, stop digging holes. That's not your skill in life. But what's he saying? If you dig a hole, there's a likely chance that you're going to fall in it. You have to understand the danger of the things that you're doing. If you break through a hedge, a serpent will bite you or shall bite him. What's he getting at? That there can be natural consequences to doing things in a foolish way. If you're going to dig a hole, you got to be aware that you dug a hole. You have to understand that there's a purpose for the hole, that you're not just digging holes for the sake of digging holes, unless that's the punishment you received as a child. Thankfully, that wasn't me, but I've heard stories. You have to be intentional in the things that you're doing. If you just go in a bush where there's known snakes, we have snakes in one of Brianna's flower gardens right now, and I despise snakes, mice, really anything small. that could eat me, I despise. And all of those things could do that to me. I know they could. That's why I steer clear of them. But it's funny, since we have the dog now, Brianna's fear is that the dog is going to want to go after the snakes. And if I'm not home, or even if I am home, what does that mean? That Brianna's then going to have to get the snake out of the dog's mouth. This is a bad scenario all the way around. But what is she approaching her garden with? This idea that if I work in the garden, probably going to see a snake, right? So what do? When she's working in the garden, we sneak up and try to scare her, because that's what any good husband or child would do. So again, he's using these truisms. It's not true that everybody who's dug a hole has fallen into it. It's not true that everybody who has broken through a hedge, we can think of shrubbery, is going to find a serpent that will bite him. It's not true in verse 9 that everyone who removes stones will be hurt with them. And it's not true that everyone that cleaveth wood will be endangered thereby. But is it true that there is a danger to all those things? That there is a possibility that each of these things are going to happen? Several years ago, I was out chopping or splitting wood with Bruce's wood splitter early one Saturday morning, and things were going great. Everyone was sleeping inside. I enjoy doing that type of stuff. I was out there all alone, and I went to pull a piece off the wedge, and it was not fully split, and when I pulled it off the wedge, my finger got, that piece of wood went back together, and my finger got stuck in that piece of wood, and there was nothing I could do. I tried to pull it apart. It wasn't happening, so I started yelling, and my family is sound sleepers. They could not hear for the life of me. I finally picked up the piece of wood, and Bruce came out of his house just at that time and saw me struggling, and I think I yelled to him. I don't know. He ran down. He went and got a wedge and pounded the wedge in the piece of wood to get my finger out. My finger was as flat as could be. It's surprising that it was not broken. I went to the hospital at the advice of Sharon, and I was assuming it was going to be broken. I got inside, and after things started to, like, I recognized what was done. You know how you run off adrenaline for a little while? After that adrenaline, or as the adrenaline ramped up, I don't know. But I just about passed out because I was in so much pain. That thing was flat as could be. What do I know now? If you chop wood, there's danger to it. Am I going to get my finger stuck in a piece of wood every time? I probably will never have that happen again. But what will I think of every time I pull wood off the wood splitter? Oof. What will I tell my kids when they're splitting wood? You know what your dad did, right? Learn from dad. So Solomon is giving these truisms that these things are possibilities. You dig a hole, you might fall. And you break through a hedge, you might get bit by a serpent. You remove stones, you could be hurt thereby. If you go down to the Barrie area and you drive through like East Barrie, there's tons of quarries. My grandfather worked in the granite shed for years and years and years, and he absolutely loved his job. But there are horror stories of people getting crushed by stones that are as big as vehicles that fell on them. There was a guy in the church we grew up in that he had only from below his knees, his legs were gone because a piece of granite as big as a vehicle fell off a crane and landed on his legs. Imagine that. Do you think they had a safety meeting after that happened? Probably. Why? He was not in the majority of the people that it happened to, but these truisms help us understand that there's a way to walk in wisdom. That's what he's getting at. That you have to be aware of what might happen, not just what you want to do, not just what you want to accomplish. And I don't think Solomon's saying we need to err on the side of caution so we never do anything, but I think he's saying there's a way to walk in wisdom when it comes to doing everything. That you have to be aware of what could happen. You have to be aware of what's at stake. And when you're aware of what's at stake, then you'll walk in wisdom towards that thing. Who's ever rushed into something foolishly? We all have. And we've paid the consequences for that. And so Solomon's encouraging us to understand that if we don't approach things in the right way, then danger's going to come. So the wise person is not somebody who never does anything. But the wise person is one who walks in wisdom, understanding the potential things that could happen. The fool is the person that says what? I'm going to throw caution to the wind and do whatever I want because nothing can happen to me. So he's teaching us how to walk in wisdom. He's teaching us how to walk in a way that would cause us to succeed in a situation rather than be taken over by the situation. He says in verse 10, 11, we won't really go over them because it's the same kind of thing. If the iron be blunt, and he doth not whet the edge, then must he put to more strength, but wisdom is profitable to direct. What's he saying? If you're trying to cut down a tree, we would know this. We could say, if your chainsaw is not sharp, you're going to have a whole lot more work ahead of you. You're going to be forcing that chainsaw through the tree rather than letting the chainsaw pull itself through the tree. There's a big difference, huge difference for you guys that have cut down trees. Surely in verse 11, the serpent will bite without enchantment, and the babbler is no better. So Solomon is saying, walk in wisdom. Don't just approach life without caution. And don't let dangerous things or don't let life keep you from doing anything, but make sure you're approaching things in the right way. We've all messed up before because we've hurried, and what usually happens when we hurry and mess up, it takes twice as long because we have to go back and do it over again. And so there's a way to walk in wisdom. There's a way to make sure your life counts in the moment, to do things once and do it well rather than having to backtrack and be known as the person who's always doing everything over because they never walked in wisdom in the first place. Any thoughts on these verses?
I split wood with that same wood splitter the other day.
Thing's cursed.
I went to grab a piece to pull off, and I thought of that finger. I moved my hand.
See, you can learn from other people.
I'm going to put my hand in there.
I'm glad I could help teach you a valuable life lesson. Anybody else? Caleb. Yeah, absolutely. In the multitude of counselors, there's wisdom, right? Making quick, rash decisions based off of what you perceive to be true often leads you in, or leaves you in a world of hurt instead of in a place that is honored for the wisdom you used. Somebody else? Patsy. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. There are certain things I think at times that we have to experience to know, and there are certain examples that we can look at in history or people in our family that we can just say, you know what, somebody else has been here before, let's seek counsel and wisdom. There's never any one scenario that is identical. There's always nuances to some degree. But even in the places where there's nuances, you can learn from how other people have handled these things before and walk in that wisdom rather than being caught as a victim of your own decisions, which often happens. Rebecca. Right, yeah.
I mean, personally, I think I'm past the point of wanting to jump out of an airplane. But I thought that was really interesting. But, and I think at times as adults, we do tend to forget, that balance in many of our areas of life. That it's things, if you know these rules and you know how the
sure.
But you have to know. And I think as adults, you tend to just be so extremely safe and lose out on what God will give us.
Yeah.
Or not follow what God is trying to give us.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have conversations frequently right now as Noah's getting his driving hours in. He has a date for his driving test, but I'm not telling anyone. I promised him I wouldn't. because he doesn't need 200 people coming to him on the following Sunday and say, did you get your license? So don't even ask him about it, right? He's not going to get his license, ever. Anyways, Brandon and I approach driving, teaching driving very differently. I'm passive, she's active. I'm the one sitting in the car next to him and be like, well, you've watched me drive for 15 years. You should have picked up everything by now. And then we get 3 feet away from the stop sign. It's like, why aren't you stopping, right? It's very, very passive. And Brianna is, we're 20 minutes away from the stop sign. And she's saying, up over this hill, around the corner, 6 miles down the road, there's going to be a stop sign, but it's difficult to see. So you should probably start slowing down now. And I'm sitting in the back thinking, what are you doing? And she's sitting in the back when I'm in the front thinking, what are you doing, right? We're approaching things very differently. He's probably better off to learn to drive with her. Because we talked about this earlier today, but I often take for granted that people know. And so I just assume if I know, everybody knows. And the reality is a 15-year-old shouldn't know everything about driving. Why? Because for 15 years, he sat in the back of the car counting cows out the window or having raindrop races as they go, right? He shouldn't know these things, and so you have to teach him. And so there's a way to approach things wisely, and there's a way to approach things foolishly. And that's really what Solomon is trying to get across to us in that section. We're going to continue on in verses 12 through 15. He says, the words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool will swallow him up. The begging of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. That's quite a saying, isn't it? Mischievous madness. A fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be, and what shall be after him, who can tell? The labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. The words of the wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of the fool will swallow him up. What's he saying? You ever met the person that knew how to do everything, and then after you watched them for a while, you're like, you don't know how to do anything? And then you see the person that approaches things, as Caleb was saying, very cautiously saying, I don't know, but can you show me? Who's better off in the end? There's a wise way to approach things, and there's a foolish way. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a little confidence. That is honestly something I lacked, and I would say still lack in my life, self-confidence of having an understanding to do things. I'm like, show me 6 times, and then I'll start to try. And then both of my brothers are the opposite of me, and they're like, you don't need to show me anything. I've got it all figured out. The sad thing is most of the time, without being shown, they still get it right, and me being shown 6 times still gets it wrong, right? So I'm sorry for the pastor you got, but this is what you got. But there's a way to approach things, and as we approach them, our arrogant spirit will either prove that we're a fool, or our humble spirit will prove that we actually have wisdom. We like the statement, there's no dumb questions, right? There's no silly questions, especially in a church context with new believers. There's no silly questions. Let's not shame people into feeling like they can't ask things that they have no clue what it is. We should be approachable. That's what Solomon's getting at. There's a way to walk in wisdom. In verse 13, he says, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is mischievous madness. Have you ever seen that same person who you could tell they were arrogant and not rightfully so, and you knew from the very beginning it was going to be a train wreck? I think sometimes we watch that with a smile on our face, at least on the inside, right? Can't wait to see this guy fail. That's the wrong attitude, just so you know. You shouldn't be hoping people fail, but sometimes people approach it in that way, that they're so arrogant that instead of just screwing it up, what do they say? Oh, I know how to do it. Let me do it again. Let me do it again. Let me do it again. And before you know it, they've made such a mess of everything that you can't even put the pieces back together. What does it sound like? It sounds like a 2-year-old, right? I can do it. I can do it. Let me do it. Let me do it. And every time that 2-year-old tries to brush his teeth or tie his shoes, everything only gets worse and worse and worse. And then what happens? They're so frustrated that they don't even want to try anymore. They can't even listen to what you have to say because they're so fed up with the situation. Verse 14, a fool also is full of words. A man cannot tell what shall be and what shall be after him. Who can tell? What's he saying here? In verse 14, he reminds us that this man that's full of words is always talking, so much so that he forgets what he said, and nobody around him can understand what the end of the argument is. It's like he's talking in circles over and over and over again, adding words here and there, word salad. But really, what he's proving is that he's a confused thinker. The word here for fool is sakal, which implies that he's dense or he's a confused thinker. Now, I'll be truthful. Sometimes there are people that are they're so hard-headed that that is an opportunity for us to show great grace. That's a hard thing to do. When somebody thinks they know and they don't know and they prove they don't know because they mess everything up, what is our desired quick response? Told you so. I knew you were going to mess it up from the beginning. How helpful is that? Not very helpful. So what is better for us? To come alongside and help pick up the pieces. Back when we came up here to minister, that's one of the things that Bruce said to me. He said, you're the youth pastor. I'm going to let you run the youth group, but know this, I'll be there to help you pick up the pieces if things fall apart. Don't we all need people like that? It's not that he never spoke into a situation to give wisdom to it, but sometimes lessons are better learned as you try things for yourself, and it's a glorious thing to have somebody graciously standing beside you that is a support system, going back to what Rebecca was talking about, that isn't going to let you fall flat on your face. He would have never let me, like, have the youth activity that burned the whole church down, right? If we were going to have a bonfire inside, he would have stepped in long before that happened and said, this is probably not the best thing to do. But it's good to have those people in your life. And then he goes into verse 15 and says, the labor of the foolish wearieth every one of them, because he knoweth not how to go to the city. And so as he's thinking about this labor of the foolish man, I know my dad, and having been a foreman for who knows how long on a construction site, you have those people that come in and they know exactly how to do it. And he would come home so exhausted some days, not having done any work, but just correcting the work that was done wrong. Frustrating. So frustrating. The labor of the foolish wearies everyone, because he knows not how to go to the city. What's he talking about in this verse? This idea of not knowing how to go to the city. One commentary that I read said this, in a final note of sarcasm, this proverb says that a person may be so involved in arguing about the universe that he misses what the ordinary person is concerned about, namely finding the way home. This one person, this fool, has the answers to everything, and the reality is not everyone's worried about everything. Some people just want to make it through life. Have you ever been there before? You just want to get to the next day, the next step, the next thing. And the fool is missing the point all along. He doesn't even know how to go into the city or make his way home. But he's got everything else figured out. Solomon says these are things that we need to be cautious of and be mindful of. Any thoughts on verses 12 through 15? Yes, Leslie. Yeah.
And then that ending in equality. So like you said, we can be compassionate. That's where the compassion for me comes. I'm able to be compassionate because I know that underneath all that, I'll be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to stop and ask for help.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. And we think of things like, just to use this for an example, but like generational poverty. That's a real thing, and it's often not the fault initially of those who have grown up in future generations. Certainly, we all take ownership for the things that we're given, but if you've never been taught to take ownership for the things that you're given, you're going to continually stay in that rut. And so we can look at people that fall into generational poverty, and we can stand from our high tower and say, why don't they just figure it out? Well, maybe it's because nobody's ever come alongside them and helped them figure it out. Nobody's ever given them a word of encouragement or a kind suggestion to say, you know what, you've tried that before. Maybe it's not going to work. The reason they try it over and over again is because that's all they knew. Silly illustration, and I've probably shared this before, but the mom and the daughter are at Thanksgiving and they're making the ham or whatever, and the mom, the daughter goes and cuts off the end of the ham. And the daughter's like, Mom, why did we cut off the end of the ham? And the mom says, I don't know, that's just what your mother always did. And the mother goes to the grandmother and says, why do we cut off the end of the ham? And the grandmother says to the daughter, her daughter, she said, that's what your great-grandmother always did. Finally, they talk to the great-grandmother, and she's like, great-grandma, why do we cut off the end of the ham? And the great-grandmother says, because we didn't have a pan big enough to fit the ham in. And so for years on end, these people are doing the same thing, not knowing why they're doing it. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of the world operates. We're in a system that has worked. Even if it's not working, it's worked. And we never try to get out of that system because we feel that's the only system that there is. And Solomon's encouraging us here to understand that there's a way to walk in wisdom that can bring us out of the rut of what we knew or know and into something better. And isn't that the story of salvation? That for people that are first-generation Christians, the sins they do are the sins they know. The lifestyle they live is the lifestyle that was handed down to them. And then when somebody gets saved, that's why oftentimes it's such a struggle for them to break free, because they feel in some ways that they're leaving their family behind, that they're going to be kicked out of their family, especially in other cultures. But what is opened up to them is a whole new way to live, which is more beautiful than anything they could have imagined. All right, we got to hustle through the last set of verses 16 through 20. He says, woe to thee, O land, when thy king is a child and thy princes eat in the morning. Blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles and thy princes eat in due season, for strength and not for drunkenness. By much slothfulness the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hands the house droppeth through. A feast is made for laughter, and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. Curse not the king, no, not in thy thought, and curse not the rich in thy bedchamber, for a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. So Solomon begins this last section with a woe. He's calling them to understand that foolishness, if left unchanged or unapproached, foolishness is going to continue. When he says, woe to the land when thy king is a child and thy princes eat in the morning, what's he getting at? He's getting at the idea of foolish leadership. If you have leadership that doesn't think through scenarios or doesn't have a desired end, you're going to find yourself in the same rut. What does he say about the princes? The princes eat in the morning. Instead of eating for sustenance and strength, they're just consuming everything they can consume because it's present in the moment. I can remember the first time my mom ever went to Costco. You can blame my love for Costco on my mom, but she brought back snacks that we never had in our household. And I can remember going to the cabinet and filling my pockets with those snacks and going down in the downstairs family room and eating, I think it was just those Welch's fruit snacks, package after package after package. And my mom goes and says, where'd the fruit snacks go? It's like, I don't know. Ask my brothers. I don't know. Right? When we eat foolishly, it proves that we're a fool. That's what he's saying here. That when you do things in a foolish manner, you're really just telling on yourself. He says, blessed art thou. So he starts with a woe. But then he says, blessed art thou, O land, when thy king is the son of nobles and thy princes eat in due season, for strength and not for drunkenness. The first scenario, the king's a child in mind. He's acting as a fool and the princes are consuming everything that's there. But you're blessed when your king comes from a good line, from a line of wisdom, and when the princes eat in due season and they're eating for purpose and not simply for pleasure. They're doing things in a meted out way rather than just doing things as they desire to do them. He says in verse 18, by much slothfulness the building decayeth, and through idleness of the hands the house droppeth through. Reminded me of Proverbs 2, I think, verses 30 through 40, verse 30 through 34, where he says this, I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. And lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. Then I saw and considered it well, and I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. I can't tell you how many houses we drove by as kids, and my dad would say, if they'd only put a new roof on it, the house would have lasted. If they had just taken care of the basic structure, then everything would have still been standing, and you could have a house that is 300 years old that is still useful to somebody. But when we neglect the principal things, when we neglect wisdom, we're bringing poverty upon ourselves, essentially. That's what Solomon's saying. In verse 19, he says, a feast is made for laughter, and wine maketh merry, but money answereth all things. Solomon makes a point. Earthly things will not last, and they're not meant to satisfy. Why do people chase a good time? Because a good time can be had in the moment. But what does wisdom say? Don't chase the good time, but chase eternal things. Chase things that are going to last for forever. Solomon understood this sometimes in his life, sometimes he didn't understand. The final thing he says in verse 20 is, curse not the king, no, not in thy thought, and curse not the rich in thy bedchamber, for a bird of the air shall carry the voice, and that which hath wings shall tell the matter. Have you ever said something about someone that you have regretted saying, but they never found out? You thought the thought, maybe you passed it on to somebody else, but the person never knew. I think we all do that. There's an element of even us expressing our thoughts in a negative way about somebody to somebody else, that we bear the weight of that. Have you ever said something about somebody else and it did get back to them? That's a much bigger weight. What's Solomon saying here? Be careful what you think. Be careful what you say. The little bird, he's going to make it known. And ultimately, every word we speak, every thought we have will be called into judgment one day when we stand before the great judge. So be careful. Walk in wisdom and not as a fool. Who sets the king to rule? God does. So be careful what you say. Who loves the person that you're speaking of with enough love to send his son to die for their sins? God does. So be careful what you say. Solomon teaches us how to walk in wisdom. We're going to close. If you have things to say, you can wait for a couple weeks and we'll discuss it then. But it's already 7:04, so let's pray. God, we thank you for this time again that we can be in your house. We thank you for your word that is true. And God, we praise you for that. And I pray tonight that we would take these things that Solomon said and seek to rightly divide them and seek to rightly apply them and walk in the wisdom that you've given. God, we thank you for your graciousness to us because we've all been the fool. Help us, though, God, to walk in wisdom so that we can maintain a testimony of integrity and honor in this world that ultimately points to your goodness and grace, the love that you have for us. Be with us now as we head home. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.